Don King.
Well, that's what, if I understood your conclusion right, the thing that made David a man after God's own heart then was his willingness to admit his faults and just, as we would say, shell the corn down and say, well, I'm guilty, but I'm sorry.
Shell the corn down and show the cobs, we used to say. That's one of the things. That's the overall view of David's whole life. He was of that demeanor. But that's really not the prime explanation of that passage. The passage was, God was going to pick him out a man to take up where Saul left off, who would do what he was supposed to do as commander of the forces in Israel. And I believe that's the thing that he really had reference to right there.
Well, the reason I mentioned that was that, you know, obviously pride is one of our great failings. And as you know, if you ever have to talk to somebody that's gone astray, the biggest battle is to get them to admit.
Well, that's true. And that is a very plus for David, because he was of that disposition. I don't think David ever forgot his upbringing, his youthful communion with God. And David was a pious man. He just multiplied his sins. He compounded his sins in this one role he was on one time, you know. He just realized that he couldn't keep covering it up. And he just, old Nathan caught his hand and he stopped. He confessed it. I believe God forgave him. I believe David will be in heaven. That ought to be the great song.
Go ahead, Pastor.
Okay, Jimmy Smith.
That one I read, one where one scholar, Corey, talked about David's answer to Nathan, that because of this he shall restore the land fourfold, because he did the thing, because he had no pity to the poor boys, and David was then to kill that baby that was
missing. Yeah, all that could be gone.
Now, he was a man after God's own heart then, because he led Israel, God's people, not that he never had no personal sin. A point you brought up to me one time was that David, God wouldn't let David build his house because he was a man of blood. Would that have been written where he had Bathsheba?
Well, that's what we Church of Christ fellows have said all of our lives. And I was reading that over, and actually it doesn't say it like we always quote it and say it. That's the way Brother Canfield used to say chimney corner scriptures get started. There is a lot of things and points in that direction. David was the man that broke the whole idea. Bless his heart. David's the one, out of the abundance of his great, great loving heart, he's the one that looked out of his house one day and saw the ark of God sitting in tents out there. And that's another thing that if I had the time, I would go into. He called the Lord's attention, volunteered, and said, here I sit in my house of cedar, and the ark of the Lord dwells in tents. He said, I'm going to build him a house. And of course, God stepped in, you know, then and limited him and turned it over to Solomon.
That's the 51st Psalms. It's the pitifulest confession that I've ever read from any man. And where he said to me, restore unto me the joy of thy salvation, and uphold me with thy free spirit. Then I will teach transgressors thy ways. He just took all the free.
When you know this story, those psalms come to life. There's the psalm of the bow. That beats anything I've ever seen. I didn't know this until the other night I was reading. You talk about your poetry. This is the psalm of the bow. Now the bow is a generic word used for all military equipment back in that day. And this was the psalm he wrote when his best buddy was killed, Absalom. And when the word finally came down to him that Absalom had been killed, that's when he wrote that. It's called the Psalm of the Bow, B-O-W.
Jack?
When Samuel was interviewing the brothers, David, and then 1 Samuel thought ought to be the one, right?
Right.
And then got down to David, and God explained to him that God doesn't look on the outward appearance, but on the heart. So David was a man up at that point in time, a man after God's own heart.
Right.
And he run into this favor after that. He always, as you said, had a tender place in God's heart. And just like all of us, he just makes a mistake.
I'm going to say one thing here that I've said a lot in my preaching, and I'm going to say it for the benefit of those who might be impressed with it or might not be impressed with it. There is nothing that God despises as bad as he does people who go against his will. I've come to that conclusion. Sins are sins, but if you want to stir the wrath of God more than any other way, you try to subvert his will and put something in the place of his revealed will. All the way through the Old Testament, God let people know, no one can change my law. And society looks on that today as being the most trivial thing that was. A moral sin today is the greatest thing in the world. Mankind, not with God. Now, God doesn't excuse immorality, I'm not saying that. But in the mind of God, idolatry and a subverting of God's plan, God's will, changing God's law, his order, God will not stand for that. And these people today who claim, you know, that law discusses everything, you can take God's word and kick it around any way you want to. I don't know where they even get any background for their teaching at all.